I am Sam Dusenberry Jr. This is the Pick a Pop Podcast. That's Pick and Pop, no and, the letter N. Pick and Pop Podcast, and part of my interview series of the NBA offseason called the NBA Offseason Chop Up. I have with me a friend. I have with me a colleague, a dude that was in the industry with me that knows the ups and the downs and the trials and tribulations of being someone in this media industry game. He's doing his own thing. He's independent with it, just like I am right now. So we're both on the same wavelength. He knows the game. He knows NBA. He knows boxing. He knows all the other sports combined. So I'll make sure to get the plug in for his joint when it comes out. But check him out right here on the NBA Offseason Chop Up. It's me with Stan Talawi. Stan, how you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. It's been a long time. We, like you said, we came up together in the industry, kind of took us in different paths, but it's good to talk to you.
Yo, man, it's just been way too long. I remember me and you chopping it up in the bullpen and in the newsroom, having conversations that other people really didn't know what the hell we were talking about. But because we're both from Queens, we're both out here. I'm repping Jamaica. You still out there in Rosedale, right?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, so we both know the same areas, the same blocks and whatnot. And our conversations were different. We always vibe. So the NBA offseason just finished. We're gearing up. Media Day was this past week. And now we're having training camp. It was a preseason game last night. So it's close to that time. It's close to the NBA season, re-kicking back off. In the offseason, though, what were some of the moves that you loved, and what were some of the moves that you think teams are going to be regretting like 2-3 months from now?
Well, the regret, I will say, the number one regret that comes to me is DeAndre Jordan signing with the Mavs.
Mm.
I don't know what the Mavs are doing. I like the rookie. I think, you know, what the Mavs are doing is kind of like holding on to the old guard and trying to get to the new guard, but they're like doing it the weird way. Like, I think Doncic is going to be great. I think he has the physical skills to be. People hate on the Euro guys, but I think after we've seen what Porzingis can do. We've seen Dragon Bender, and we've seen guys have success. So I think that thing was over. But I also think that, you know, relegating Dirk to the bench and signing DeAndre Jordan, who really isn't much of a factor to me anymore, kind of makes me wonder if if Dallas is going to regret what they've done in this offseason. Are they going to be successful? Like, what are they? What's their identity, you know?
Right. I think it's a weird transition because they took DSJ last year, who I love, and he showed out in his rookie year. But now, as you mentioned, you're bringing in the Doncic, and if you want to listen to the pundits and the experts and the overseas scouts especially, he's best on the ball. So if that's the case, then how does DSJ fit into this? Because he was the primary ball handler last year. So it's going to be interesting to see how they try to like have those two play off each other, if they even try to do that, or what's the game plan going to be. Because as you mentioned, DeAndre's not a guy who I look for anything outside than a double-double, but it's like an empty double-double. It doesn't really mean anything. And now you got Dirk, who's old as hell and is hanging on for one last ride. But yeah, as you mean, I truly don't know what to expect out of this team. Like, I have no idea how Doncic is supposed to flow with DSJ. And I don't know how they're going to spread the ball responsibilities on that either.
I think that they've conceded the West. I think everybody there's a lot of these teams that are just conceding the West. And it's like, it's unfortunate. And, you know, I don't like to be that guy, but this is what happens when you have super teams. And, like, you have these teams that, you know, they're trying to save money, and they're trying to contend. But how can they contend when, you know, you go into a season and there's no shot? What's the point? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's kind of treading water until, you know, LeBron retires, or until Steph gets hurt, or until KD decides to go to the next team, or whatever it is.
Yeah. See, now that's where I think is interesting. Like, you can see which teams are definitely punting on the season and which teams are like, okay, let's see if we can at least lie to our fans to make them think we have a chance. And Dallas is pulling no punches. They're definitely lying to their fans, because I think they're trying to sell to their fan base that this DeAndre Jordan thing is a big deal. Like, it would have been a big deal when they first tried to get him before, you know, Blake and the point fraud stuck him up and held him hostage to come back to L.A. Like, it would have been a big deal 2-3 years ago. But now, more tread on the tire. The vertical isn't as high as it used to be. And the game has evolved, and he hasn't. So what exactly are you getting from a player of DeAndre Jordan's skills at this time?
Exactly.
It's crazy, man. Like, you look at the West, and this whole Jimmy Butler thing has become like an ongoing saga where he wants out. He doesn't want to play with Wiggins. He doesn't want to play with Karl Anthony Towns, or at least Karl Anthony Towns doesn't want to play with him because he smashed his chick, allegedly. But, like, Jimmy Butler now is rumored to be in the mix to go to the Rockets. Now, if I say they keep their core players outside of maybe Eric Gordon and a PJ Tucker, but somehow they could use those two to flip in a two-team, three-team, or even a four-team trade to get Jimmy Butler, how do you think that could fit? Like, could Jimmy Butler put the Rockets right there skill-wise on level with the Dubs?
It's hard to say that anybody can do anything to compete with the Warriors, but it's like, I think if anybody could, it would be Jimmy Butler, because he does bring that defensive mindset. He's a grinder. I do like the idea of, you know, Jimmy Butler being able to guard Steph or Clay or KD or Draymond or like whoever.
Right.
So I do like that, you know, that kind of idea on paper. But at the same time, it's like, what are you giving up? Every time it comes down to, and every year it's gonna be somebody. If it's not Jimmy Butler this year, it's gonna be Anthony Davis next year. And it's always gonna be, who is the team that's willing to mortgage their future for the star?
Right.
You know, I honestly don't like it, because, you know, I went through that as a Knicks fan. You know, we mortgaged our future to get Melo, and it didn't work out.
Right.
So, you know, I don't like it. I understand that Jimmy Butler doesn't want to be in Minnesota, but play out your contract. Play out your contract, because what's going to happen is, like you mentioned, what's the package? What do they offer? If Jimmy Butler ends up in Houston, what's the price tag? And who's going to be left on the team to face the Warriors or the Lakers or whoever it is that you're playing against?
Yeah, they would have no depth. If they had to give up, now, look, if you told me I could get Jimmy Butler for just Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker, I would do it in a heartbeat. But you then have to look at the fact of, all right, so my top four are Paul, Harden, Butler, and Capella. That's a pretty strong four. But then your bench is literally just Melo and a bunch of dudes. Melo, Gerald Green, and a bunch of dudes. That's not good. Like, you can't go against the Dubs with a seven-man rotation. They will wear you
not
out.
Not to mention the fact that, you know, Chris Paul is getting up there in age. You saw what happened in the playoffs. You know, him not being healthy, like, kind of screwed over, you know, I mean, it screwed over the chances to beat the Warriors. So, if this was like a 27-year-old Chris Paul, I'd be like, yeah, okay. But this is a 32, 33-year-old Chris Paul we're talking about. A guy who's had multiple injuries. A guy who's getting up there in age. It's just, I don't like the idea of relying on a seven-man team, especially a D'Antoni team that likes to run and get up and down the floor, and, you know, things can happen. You know, like, what if Harden goes down? What if Capella goes down? Then what?
Right. Yeah, and I think it's a rumor. I mean, it was started by a radio host / reporter in Houston, but I think he was just like spitballing to get that thing rolling, because I just can't see any like logical way, even if you do like a four-team trade, like, because Minnesota has made it clear they want young pieces and they want good established veterans. Now, Eric Gordon's a nice, cute player. He's a cute six man. Like, he's a rotational dude. His skill set is on the average of like good, but he's not an established vet that you want to build your squad around. Like, to me, an Eric Gordon, a PJ Tucker doesn't necessarily help Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns to take the next level. Like, I don't see that. So I don't know what Minnesota can get back. So I don't really know where this Houston rumor has come from in terms of the validness of it. But I do think, and as much as I don't like Chris Paul and I don't like the Rockets, because I do think they have a lot of fraud in them, but they went 0 for 27 in Game 7. If they hit one of those threes in Game 7, they could have beat who we thought were the unbeatable Warriors. So it's like, if you add a Jimmy Butler, if things stay the same, it turns out you get the same production from the point fraud, you get the same production from Harden and Capella. I mean, they were right there with the Doves, but now the Doves got Boogie. Yeah. So it was like, they just checkmated it. All right, you want to bring in Jimmy Butler? All right, we got Boogie for the mid-level. Hold that.
They should make the move in theory if you want to compete, but it worries me. Like, especially, so to be honest with you, I don't think it's gonna happen because I don't think Minnesota wants to trade Jimmy Butler in the conference anyway.
Right, right. Especially if they're not getting anything that significant coming back. Like, if somebody blew them away with an offer, then you would have to consider it. You know what I'm saying? But if the pieces you're getting back are the quality of Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker, or, you know, some third, like I heard Denver might be in the mix, maybe with Michael Porter Jr. I don't know how that would work since he just signed his contract. So that might take some time. So that's what I'm saying. But right now, it's just a lot of floating innuendo right now. But I do think if they could pull that off, as you said, there is definitely a reason to be concerned. But if they can keep it on a steady level and keep everybody relatively healthy, even with Boogie, I could see them being able to hold court and take them again to seven games. I could see that Western Conference Finals being like basically a run back of last year.
It should be. I would hope that it is. And I mean, it's difficult for me to say that because that typically I don't like the lack of parity in the league, but I think that the Rockets kind of not screwed themselves, but they had an opportunity, and I think if anybody deserves to have an opportunity to run it back, it's them.
Yeah, for sure. Like, but look, you had Game 7 in your building. Yes, you didn't have, you know, maybe your second best player, but maybe your most important player in the point fraud. But, you know, you had a chance. You were up. They were up in the second half, and then 0 for 27. I mean, I don't know how you missed 27 straight. A whole roster missed 27 straight in their own building. Like, it was amazing.
Especially considering what you needed to do to win. Like,
right.
All you needed to do was one. If they won 1 for 26.
Right. Different story.
We're not having this conversation.
Yeah, they might have won the chip. They probably beat the Cavs. You know what I'm saying? Like, that, the whole narrative would have changed if one of those threes would have went in. Everybody's legacy would have been different. Durant's legacy would have been challenged. Steph's legacy would have been challenged. And now you're talking about Harden taking the next step. And now the point fraud being vindicated with getting a championship. Like, all those narratives change if just one goddamn three goes in Game 7 in Houston.
Now, I'm curious as to where Jimmy Butler does go, because it doesn't sound like he wants to get it at all. Like, I don't know. I don't think we've ever seen a situation where a player in the NBA is held out into the season and not shown up.
Right.
So I think I think the trade is probably imminent. But where does he end up? Because I don't see any team that's willing to give up what Minnesota wants.
Do you like Miami's pieces? Do you like Josh Richardson? Bam Adebayo. Like, no. Is that because he I think Miami tried to get in there and offer Tibbs all the young pieces that he wants. The problem is none of them have a real high ceiling. So it's like, do you take four young bodies just for the sake of saying we got four bodies for one Jimmy Butler? Like, I don't know if four dudes can equate to one Jimmy Butler, but Miami seems to think that they have enough young pieces and maybe throwing a vet like Dragic or maybe Hassan Whiteside for salary purposes to make the trade work. But if I tell you Whiteside, nah, because he's kind of trash right now anyway. So let's say Dragic and two young pieces. Dragic, Winslow, and Adebayo. To you, if you're Tibbs, is that enough to flip Jimmy Butler?
No. If I'm Tibbs, that's a start. I want picks.
Okay.
I definitely want picks. I would take Dragic. I would take Whiteside, I guess. I mean, that's the other thing too. It's like Tibbs is a tough guy, man. Like
he's a fraud, bro. I hate Tibbs. He's a fraud.
You think so?
Yeah, bro. Like, I'm a Bulls fan, so.
I had a similar thought.
Yeah, like I'm telling you, I'm a Bulls fan, so obviously I have a little bit of a bias. But truth be told, I wasn't really feeling him when he was getting all the credit in Boston, and then even back in the day with y'all with the Knicks. Like, I never really looked at him as some sort of sage, like some sort of like Tex Winter triangle philosophy type dude. Like, I just thought, yo. And I've said this before on the podcast, but yo, if you give me Kevin Garnett, Tony Allen, Kendrick Perkins, Ray Allen, a young Rajon Rondo, my squad gonna be able to D up too. Like, I should be able to lock dudes down and not give up 100 points too. And then you go to talk about the dudes he had with the Knicks back in the day, all those dudes that were straight beasts when it comes to playing defense. And then Chicago with Noah, Gibson, Luol Deng, Jimmy Butler, D. Rose. Yeah, like he just surrounded himself with defensive players. So of course your squad's always gonna D up if you pick dudes who could D up. Like it's automatic. But the problem is he can't coach offense. That's why I always felt like he's the classic coordinator that should have never been a head coach. Like, yo, have him on the bench, let him coach up your defense if you got the horses, but when it comes to these X's and O's, like, nah, he needs to pass the clipboard.
Right. Like, I had a similar thought the other day when people were talking about Tibbs and, you know, all this Jimmy Butler stuff. And I'm like, okay, I understand why people like Tibbs. And I don't think he's a terrible person. I just, what has he done to warrant this kind of reputation?
Right.
You know, it's like, what? Why does he have this reputation that's like Teflon, in a way? You know, like, I get it. You know, I he's a tough-minded guy. He comes from, you know, good coaching staff and all that. But, like, he's never won a championship. Not even as an assistant, I don't think.
Nah, he got that one with Boston. He got that one with Boston with Doc.
Right, okay, yeah.
But that's it, though. That's literally it. And they only won one chip when they should have probably won two or three with the original super team, with the new, you know, with the original new millennial style super team with Garnett, right. You know, the truth and Jesus.
Yeah.
So that's like the thing. I think he got hyped up because of the New York media. That Nick clout carried him and I think got him the gig with Doc Rivers in Boston. And once they won that chip and it was predicated off the defense, like, that was it at that point. He was, like, the top guy. Like, he was it. If you want a team to play D, you got to go get Thibodeau. Like, he's the guy to go get. And in actuality, if you got two good knees and want to run them into the ground, that's the guy you want to get, Thibodeau. He will tear all your meniscuses, tear all your cartilage, and you will be bone and bone.
If there's a ligament to be torn, he will help you tear it.
Facts. Big facts. But I do think it is interesting because, like, when the whole Jimmy Butler thing originally came down and it was, you know, the Clippers, the Knicks, and the Nets, I thought the best fit was the Knicks. I think even Stephen A, you know, take it for what you will, but he said that, you know, the Knicks had offered Ntilikina and I think it was Courtney Lee in a pick. And like Thibodeau was thinking about doing it. And I was like, yo, if you could swing that to get Jimmy Butler, that's amazing. I'm already giving Scott Perry, like, executive of the year just off that. Because that's trash. That's trash for an all-pro level player. So I still think, like, the Knicks are the best bet, especially if you believe this whole Jimmy Buckets and Kyrie, Uncle Drew package that's supposed to be teaming up next year. So for as a Knicks fan, do you think like buckets would be a good fit in terms of what you would have to give up, or do you believe in the whole Jimmy Butler Kyrie package, or what is your feeling on the Knicks trying to get a big superstar here?
Well, I can never trust what Kyrie says, because Kyrie just says stuff to get other people's skin.
Right.
And he's flatter. A bit of a troll, so I don't know. He says he wants to stay in Boston, but who knows?
Right.
But then, you know, next week he'll say, well, you know, growing up in Jersey, the Knicks or whatever. So I don't know what Kyrie, as far as Kyrie goes, it's a mystery. I would love to have Jimmy Butler here, especially if all it took was Courtney Lee and Nicolina. Especially since, you know, I think Trey Burke is serviceable. I think Moody is serviceable. I think with Fizdale coming in, you can kind of get something out of Moody because, you know, he was a top 10 pick for a reason. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't like I like the idea of a future with, you know, Jimmy Butler and Porzingis and possibly Kyrie Irving. Because so, if the idea is you're going to get Kyrie Irving, then what's the point of keeping Nicolina? Especially if you're going to move him to the two anyway.
Right.
Really is a movable piece. What I'm honestly the biggest concern I have is giving up a pick. I hate giving up picks. I think we the Knicks fans have to be over giving up picks. We have to get over that. We can't be mortgaged our future too many times to give up picks for something that's not a guarantee. So as a Knicks fan, I would love to have Jimmy Butler here, but if it means giving up a pick, I think I'm out. And if I'm Jimmy Butler, I don't think I want to come here either because, you know, you're going to be the guy for a year until Porzingis is back. And, you know, what Porzingis are we getting back?
True.
Am I thrusting myself into the New York limelight so that I can play with an off-injured Porzingis and, you know, a guy who plays a similar position in Kevin Knox. It's a lot of question marks. I don't know if I would do it.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, right? Like, on paper, you say, yo, Courtney Lee, Nilakina in the pick. Yo, you got to do that. But as you said, you're not sure what Porzingis you're getting back if he decides to come back at all this year. And then you have to worry about his contract. His contract's coming up. So you have to make a decision on him, whether you're going to max him out just off the strength of what he was before the injury and the hopeful recovery of him post-injury. So that's going to be a big decision looming for the Knicks. I think outside of, you know, bringing in a star like Jimmy Butler or hoping that Kyrie and him team up next year, I think the number one focus should be what is Porzingis? Because if he's going to be a shell of his former self, if he now turns into a guy that can't elevate like he used to, that doesn't have the lateral quickness that he displayed, it doesn't have that explosion, now you're talking about a guy that potentially could have been a number one option that might be down to like a fourth option. And how much is that guy going to be worth? Even though you drafted him, he's now become like a known New Yorker in the sense of the Mecca. How much are you willing to pay for that guy just for the notoriety of keeping him? Or do you cut your ties? If he's 70% of what he used to be, is that enough for you to max him out?
That's, especially if you're going to give up a pick to get Jimmy Butler to bring him here.
Right.
If it's up to me, I would just go into the season the way it is. I'm the East is weak, so you're talking about, you know, even if you get an ace team, that's fine. But as long as you keep the pick. And we're coming into these draft classes every year are getting better and better. They're getting deeper and deeper.
Right.
And, you know, one of them guys, you know, I'm not saying, I don't know where the Knicks pick could end up, but like, what if it ends up in the top 10 and you end up with, you know, a Cam Reddish, a Zion Williamson,
right. RJ.
You know, any one of these guys, yeah. RJ Barrett, like any of these guys could be an extra piece that you add and keep building what, like, Oklahoma City was doing in you know, a few years back.
Right.
And you're hitting on all your draft picks. I think, and I don't understand this mentality, and I've talked to a bunch of other Knicks fans that for some reason disagree with me. It's like, I think Knicks fans are smart enough to realize that's not, you don't build a team through free agency. You can't build a team through free agency. Like, you still need to draft well.
Right.
Like, you should, like, trading away picks for those lotteries used to work when draft picks were few and far between and they wouldn't work out. But like team building is totally different now, and I think New Yorkers are ready for that. New Yorkers are tired of losing. New York Knicks fans are tired of not seeing a championship, especially a few years ago when you had a 52-win team and you got a taste of it,
right,
and you get bounced in the first round of the playoffs. Like New York, like if you told New York Knicks fans, "Hey, look, we're gonna suck for a few years, but the product we're gonna put on the court is gonna be young, it's gonna be fresh, it's gonna be fun to watch, and it's gonna win." Who's not signing up for that? This mentality, right, of New Yorkers want to win now, it is gone. It's a myth. Like just like the idea that guys don't want to go to small market teams. That's all a myth now.
Right.
Like guys, teams are they charter flights. Like we can do open seating if we want. Like this is 2018. Like I don't understand. Like why we can't just build the right way and contend for the future. Look at Boston.
Yeah, stockpiled a bunch of picks. You know, exactly. Philly, trust the process. They tanked. Yeah. You know,
And you can't tell me that Philly and Boston aren't as rabid of sports fan base as New York.
Right.
You can't tell me that.
Right, for sure. I mean, I think, look, I've always been a proponent of tanking. Like, I would hold nothing back in telling, you know, if I was a GM, like, look, we tanking because tanking rewards you. You know what I'm saying? We need draft picks because I think I could pick the best young talent to come and help this team. Like, you know, you look at what Philly has done. They have really only hit on three of their draft picks, but the three that they've hit on, and you know, I'm counting Fultz as a hit, even though you know that remains to be seen. But Simmons and Embiid are so good, it kind of offsets Okafor, Nerlens Noel, Michael Carter Williams. It kind of offsets those misses because when you hit big, because you're picking in the top three, top five every year, you're gonna hit on a couple of those picks, and that's all you really need. You really only need, you know, not everybody's going to be built like the Warriors where you got four dudes who could, you know, really just take over a game. But in essence, right, to be a perennial playoff team, you need at least two to three really good players. And Philly has two really good players, and they're only going to get better. So it's like, you know, look, we're going to tank. We're going to suck for about 5 years. But with those 5 years, those are five first-round picks. And if I could hit on three out of five or two out of five, then we back in business. We back in playoff business. And I don't know why teams are afraid to admit that they're tanking. Like, I'm pro tank. Like, yo, let the fans know, yeah, the seat's going to be empty. Dude's going to be wearing garbage bags on the court to be seen on TV, all of that nonsense. But in the end, look, the Wells Fargo Arena is sold out. And it's sold out because Philly got Embiid and Simmons for 82 joints this year. So, you know,
as long as you trust the GM to make the right decisions in the draft, I have no problem with tanking.
Right. And from what we've seen, now look, I wasn't high on Ntilikina, and I think the jury's definitely still out on him. But, you know, I like what I've seen from Knox. And I think, you know, the Knicks got a steal in Mitchell Robinson. I think he's going to be a monster on the glass. He's going to have to learn, obviously. You know what I'm saying? You know, I heard reports he was getting schooled by Enes Kanter, which isn't really, you know, a good thing. But, you know, look, he's a big body. He's young and athletic. And what is he, like 19? I mean, look, the sky's the limit for him. Like, he's super cheap. You know what I'm saying? Like, to get him at where they got him, that low in the draft for a guy that was, you know, presumed to be a lottery pick, if not upper echelon first round pick, it's a great steal for them.
Absolutely. Like, I'm excited about what the Knicks could do. And, like, I think, you know, giving away a draft pick for Jimmy Butler, while would be good in the short term, like, at the end of the day, what are we really doing this for? Like,
right,
are we going to trade for Jimmy Butler to get the 16 and lose to, you know, Atlanta or Indiana? Or, I'm going to be around Atlanta, but Are we doing this to
like the Bucks,
or the Bucks, right? Or are we building something that's going to be worthwhile in 3 years when Kevin Knox is starting to come into his prime? and or like when Mitchell Robinson has kind of figured out what he is, or when whoever other draft picks we hit on, you know, work out, or you know, if Kyrie comes,
like, right?
What if this team in a year is Kyrie, Knox, Mitchell Robinson, Enes Kanter, and you know whoever else? Like it could be. I think patience is the right way.
I agree for sure. You know, it's a thing where, you know, you have teams where you see them in transition. You see some that are in transition in terms of they're definitely trying to tank for young pieces. And then you have teams like Detroit that are like trying to sell the fan base on like, no, we're trying to compete. Like, yeah, Reggie Jackson and Blake Griffin. Yeah, that's a really good nucleus. When like real people know, like, that's a trash nucleus, bro. Like, that's not going to do anything. Like, you're not going to win any significant, you know, games in the playoffs if you even make it in the playoffs with a nucleus of, you know, a Reggie Jackson, a Blake Griffin, and even like an Andre Drummond. So like, what's a team that like, you know, is trash, but you think would be like league pass worthy, like going online just to check them out? Like, you know, they got the thing where you can buy a fourth quarter for $1.99 if you just want to hop on and just watch a fourth quarter for no reason. So who's a trash team that you're thinking, you know what, they're trash, but damn, they're exciting to watch?
I want to say maybe Orlando.
Bamba.
Just because I really think Miles Bridges could be, like, a candidate for, like, every night you put him on, and he's going to do something really crazy.
Okay, okay.
Like, we've already seen that in the first piece of the game with the dunk. You put on kind of a show with you know, with the split back dunks.
Right.
I think the rest of the team is hot garbage. They're going to be awful, and it wouldn't surprise me if they end up with the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
But I think Miles Bridges is so fun to watch because when the draft was coming up, as a Knicks fan, I was torn because I wanted Miles Bridges, I wanted Mikal Bridges, I liked Kevin Knox, I liked Michael Porter. But I was like, any one of these guys would be fine. And watching what I saw from Miles Bridges in summer league and in his first preseason game, I think he is borderline being fast worthy.
You know, I like that pick. I like that pick a lot because that's a franchise that's kind of been forgotten, like dead ass. Like, yeah, they got Mo Bamba now. They found a way to bring back Aaron Gordon, but it's kind of like, and they still got Isaac Austin or whatever, or Jonathan Isaac. It's like, I don't really know what they're doing, but I know they got a lot of young athletic wings and bigs. So it's like, just throw the ball around. Just throw alleys all day. Like, especially now with Bamba, and Bamba's out here chucking up threes and training camp and stuff like that. So, yeah, I agree. Orlando is a team that's going to be ridiculously trash, but on any given night can put up like 4 or 5 sports in their top 10 worthy type highlights. I like that one. I've had a few people come on here and put some other ones up, but nobody's mentioned Orlando yet. I like Orlando as a real trash team that could be exciting. I like that one.
The other thing is like, as a New Yorker, I'm excited to see what Bamba can do in the league because, you know,
I love Bamba.
I don't know how I missed that he was a New Yorker. I didn't even realize.
Yeah, like, you know, it was weird because he doesn't give off any of the New York swag until you watch him play. Like, he doesn't carry himself with the New York swag. And this is a kid that played uptown, so you would think the swag will be oozing off of him, but he just doesn't carry it like that until he's on the court. So, yeah, I definitely want to follow him, make sure that he is keeping, you know, the New York big man legacy is kind of slept on, but, you know, hopefully with him and Karl Anthony Towns, you know, even though he's Jersey, we will still claim him. You know, I think, you know, they have the type of ability that could really transcend in the league. I mean, you got guys from L.A. and Chicago kind of running the game right now when it comes to local bases that have churned out the most pros, but New York was and is still the mecca. So I definitely want to see Mo Bamba get buckets out there.
I'm glad you brought that up too because the other day I was kind of going through some of the high school prospects. I didn't realize the top player in the city from Archbishop Molloy, from Jamaica Queens, signed at UCLA.
Talk about it. Let's go. Talk about it. Let them know.
How is it possible we have St. John right here?
Right.
What, a 10-minute drive from Archbishop Molloy?
Yeah.
Chris Mullin isn't out recruiting. He's a 5-star center, and you're letting this guy go to UCLA? That's a travesty. And the fact of the matter is, this kid's not going to UCLA. Whether he's good or not is a different story. But if he's
right.
being good, people are going to be like, how did this guy end up in UCLA? How did Mo Bamba end up in Texas? How are these guys getting out of the city? So I think you're right. I think the big man legacy, the basketball legacy of New York is fading because nobody's paying attention. And guys are getting out of the city, and they aren't staying home. They're like, and they don't have to stay at St. John. They can go to Syracuse. They can go to Yukon.
Sure.
That's only an hour and a half away.
But stay local. You know what I'm saying? Like, let me see the clout. Stay local. But, you know, look, you go where the bag is. If the bag's in UCLA,
sure.
you go take the bag. See, and that's the thing with me about St. John's. Like, I've always been a St. John's hater because I always felt like they never really went out for the, like, New York-based kids. Like, I never felt like, yeah, they got Artest. Yeah, he's from QB's right there. But they could have had Odom. They could have gave Odom. He was right there in the backyard. Like, there was tons of dudes that were balling out here in Queens, Brooklyn, the Bronx, and they could have went and go got those kids, especially when they were on down times when Konaseka finally left. You know, they had Mike Jarvis out there. He went out there and had Omar Cook, but he couldn't rein him in. That was supposed to be a big signing, and it turned out to be, you know, a mediocre signing, if that. So New York basketball and St. John's basketball has been underrepresented. I know Mullen has the pedigree, obviously, but I don't think the kids care. Like,
they definitely don't.
You know, if you're a 16-year-old and Chris Mullen, and you're like a poppin' sophomore in high school, and Chris Mullen walks into your living room, it does nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like that.
You don't know who Chris Mullen is.
Yeah, you have no idea. You don't even. You would probably have to Google him. You know what I mean? Like, you go like what?
That's when you get to the coaches.
Right.
How is Mullen not in Lincoln High School's locker room every other week?
Hey, he should be living there. He should be living there. Like, he should be in fucking Coney Island every goddamn Friday night, just posted up.
There's no reason for Chris Mullen not to be, like, not to have an office at Lincoln, at Brady.
Yep.
At, you know,
Christ the King. King. Yep. Yep.
Especially since he went to Severian.
He knows the deal. He's from Brooklyn. Yeah, there's no way. He should be running Brooklyn. He's a Brooklyn kid. How is he not? He should be getting all the top kids from Brooklyn. It should be light work. He talks like he's from Brooklyn. He sounds, he walks, and he's got the swag. He's got that hardcore Brooklyn thing down pat, and he can't recruit in the boroughs. It's madness.
It doesn't make sense. And part of it, you're right, part of it is these kids don't know who he is. But at the same time, if you don't know who the kids are, the coaches, if the kids don't know who you are, the coaches do. The coaches have to know who you are.
Right.
Like the fact that Seton Hall from New Jersey punched Tiny Horton from, what was that? I forgot what high school he was at. I think, was he at Lincoln?
Was he Lincoln? He was definitely public school. So I'm gonna go ahead and say Lincoln, but I'll have to double check that. But I'm pretty sure it was Lincoln.
But the fact that Seton Hall went and got, as a matter of fact, I think it was Lincoln. Because that's how Seton Hall ended up getting Isaiah Wiggins.
Got you. Right.
So, you know, like, that's my thing is, if you want to recruit, it's like, look, I'm a Miami Hurricane fan. And people are going to talk about Mark Richt not being able to get over the hump or whatnot. But considering where we came from, with Al Golden recruiting the Northeast,
right?
I'll take who I can get. And the fact is, Mark Richt is recruiting South Florida because that's where the talent is.
Exactly.
If you're a basketball coach in New York, recruit where the talent is, and that's New York.
Yeah, I mean, that's how, you know, going to the U, that's how Jimmy Johnson built them up. Going to get all those Miami kids, Michael Irvin and all those dudes, Ed Reed, all those dudes staying local. Like, that's how they built up that base. And then it continued, you know, into the second generation with Butch Jones and all that. So, I mean, that's what you have to do. You have to be able to recruit, especially if you luck into a base like a Miami when it comes to football, or New York when it comes to basketball. if you can't recruit your own backyard, then I don't know what the hell you're doing.
I mean, I'm sure there's a couple guys from New York on the team now, but, like, I mean, the last, well, Harkless was probably the last guy that I could think of that was, like, super local that St. John's got.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was for, what, Kew Gardens, I think?
Yeah, yeah. And he turned out to be an okay player. He wasn't that great. Yeah. You know, he made it to the league, which is always, you know, the pinnacle. You know what I'm saying? That's the goal. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I really feel like a guy like Fritz Mullin, with all the clout, you know, they had the thing of comparing Patrick Ewing now since he's coaching down there at Georgetown, and now Mullin, both of them are coaching at their alma maters. But I'm telling you right now, Patrick Ewing got a class coming in, and he got some ballers coming in. He stole a kid from Rutgers that I forget dude's name, but the white point guard, he's out here. He's going to be balling. He stole him from Rutgers. I don't know how St. John's wasn't in that mix, but it's Patrick Ewing has shown more acumen so far than Chris Mullin in the most important part of the game when it comes to college basketball, which is recruiting.
Yeah, and I'm happy for Ewing, but that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate that it would come to that.
Right. Yeah. That's. I like that little tangent we took, but I think that was some good info, some good insight there. I like that. You know, it's a rare thing when you can chop it up with someone and you can vibe off into another topic and really go in hard and really come with some strong info. I like that, man. In regards to LeBron, I have to ask everybody about LeBron because LeBron's always going to be a thing. LeBron to L.A., now, there's rumors of the Lakers paying off LaVar Ball to keep him quiet and all types of wild shit going on. But LeBron to L.A., from a basketball standpoint, all the off-the-court stuff is, to me, white noise. On the court, Vegas has the odds at about 47 wins. I'm taking that, and I'm going way over. I think they can win 50-plus relatively easy. Am I smoking too much purple and gold kush, or am I on the right track?
Okay. So, in a vacuum, I would agree. Because we've seen what LeBron's impact is for anybody. But the other thing I have to factor in is you look at the win differential between, you know, LeBron teams before he got there and after. And it's always been the Eastern Conference. So, in a vacuum, LeBron is good enough to take the Lakers well above 50 wins with whoever the cast is. But he's also playing in the Western Conference now, where it's not as easy. So, I think...
Is that still true, though? Is that still true?
I think it is because he's got to play the Warriors four times, three or four times.
Right, and then the Rockets.
He's got to play the Rockets three or four
right.
times.
Right, but then after that now, I mean,
I think the Pelicans are pretty good.
I mean, look, bruh. I mean, if Boogie was still there, then yeah. But with Anthony Davis, I mean, you're telling me, I mean, look, I love the brow, and I loved Boogie in the brow, and I thought that was going to be a real thing. But as soon as he dipped, So did the Pelicans' relevance to me. Like, I don't see that team. I mean, they might squeak into the playoffs, but I don't think the LeBron-led Lakers are going to be out here taking multiple L's to just Anthony Davis.
I really do. But I don't think 47 wins is in the cards. I think they're going to be better than that. But I also don't think that. I don't see
60
plus in the
clutch. Oh yeah, nah. I don't think they win 60. I think 60 is a lot. I think that's asking too much from that team. But I do think a soft 52 to 56 range. I could definitely see them in that low to mid 50 range when it comes to wins. But 47, I just don't see that. Cause that's barely saying they're going to be barely over 500.
Yeah, they're just over 500. I mean, yeah. LeBron has taken lesser teams to almost 60 wins. I mean,
That's what I'm saying. Like, we've seen his work. We know what he could do. He makes mediocre players become above average. You know what I'm saying?
And I don't think this team around him is all that bad.
It's not. To me, it's not.
Yep. I think Lonzo is, you know, for all the antics of his dad, I think, you know, is one of the better point guards in the league.
Future all-star, man. Vision.
Yeah, I think he gets scrutinized so much because of LeVar, and he's got that wonky jump shot.
Right. Like, which he's fixed. I mean, it looks a little bit better. He's not bringing it all the way from the right as crazy and as wild as it looked last year. Looks to be somewhat more normal. So if that Jimmy becomes kind of wet, I mean, and he's got the handle, he's 6'6", he can crash the boards. Yo, Lonzo going to be a player, bro.
Not to mention, you know, look, Rondo's a head case, but Rondo is also late in his career, and he knows, listen, it's time to kind of put stuff behind me. I think he's learned from being in Sacramento and moved around and traded around that, you know, opportunities like this aren't going to come around. To play with LeBron James, especially, I think Lance. I've always loved Lance. I've always felt like Lance was a player.
Me too. Yep.
Especially when he's focused, and I think there's no better player to play with to focus up than LeBron James. So I do see where they can win 50 plus games. I agree with you. I would say I put them at 52-130.
Okay. Okay. Now, if they lose in the first round, would you think this is a failure? Do they have to make the second round for it to be like a valid, okay, this team, this roster took a big step? Or is a first round exit a failure?
First round exit is definitely a failure. I think the only way this season could be a success without winning a championship is if you go to the Western Conference Finals and lose to either the Rockets or the Warriors, or you lose in the second round to the Rockets or the Warriors. I think if you lose to anybody else in the Western Conference, in the playoffs, if you're the Lakers, this season is a waste.
Okay. I'm rolling with you on that one. I agree. I think if they take an L in the first round, you know, I definitely feel it's a failure. I think they have a roster good enough, especially with LeBron seemingly still at the apex of his powers, being able to carry a team to at least the second round, if not beyond. I mean, I think they have a low-key chance to make the finals, even though obviously, as you mentioned, tough sledding in the West, especially with the Dubs and the Rockets. But if the Dubs and the Rockets knock each other off, if they somehow, you know, play in the second round, and you know the winner of that, if it's the Rockets somehow pull off a miracle and it's Rockets Lakers, I give LeBron a chance in that one. Like I think they could legitimately beat every team in the West except the Warriors as constituted this year.
And again, you know how these things are, things could happen. They get a little crazy. Steph could go down, Klay could go down, KD could go down, Harden could go down. Chris Paul will probably go down. I mean, I just think that if I had money to bet, I wouldn't be too worried to take an outside chance on the Lakers making the finals. Because at the end of the day, it's LeBron James. I mean, this may be the first time in what a decade that LeBron James won't be in the finals.
Right.
Or you know, he might be there.
Yeah.
So I just think that he's got a new level of focus, and nothing gets LeBron going like a challenge. And I think you've seen my Twitter. When he went to Miami, I spent the better part of a year bashing him.
Yeah.
And I've definitely come around. I've definitely come around on that, because you know what LeBron's doing for the culture is ridiculous.
It's major. It's major. Yeah.
I can't hate on a guy that does that. But again, I think that if you're the Lakers, I think you can pencil yourself into the playoffs for sure.
Right.
And I think you know you're a couple injuries away from being in the finals.
For sure, I agree. Look, man, Kawhi gave us the laugh heard round the world. The world stopped when Kawhi showed us his laugh. So two questions. What the fuck was that? And two, is that laugh going to be seen laughing last in the Eastern Conference this year? Like, can him and Kyle Lowry actually be a thing to stop this Boston and Philly seemingly impending Eastern Conference Finals matchup?
Okay, so the laugh, ridiculous. I think that Kawhi Leonard has never had a fun day in his life. I don't think he knows what laughing is. I think he just, like, learned that, oh, this is what you do when somebody expects a joke. Like, I'm not gonna say he's a robot, but I think he definitely has some sort of, like, weird, like, autism, maybe? I don't know. It's super weird. That being said, I don't think that they're going to make it out of the East. I think Boston makes it out of the East. It is not Kawhi's fault. It's not because of Kawhi. I think it's Kyle Lowry. I think it's whoever you put next to it. It doesn't work. It wouldn't have worked with DeRozan, and DeRozan's not going to work out San Antonio. It's just, I think we've been overhyping Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan for too long.
Facts.
And it doesn't matter where you put them or who you put them with, they're just not that good.
Agreed. I mean, I think they reached fraud-like levels at a high level last year. I mean, that the analytics at one point had, you know, the Raptors having the biggest chance or the highest chances of winning a title. I'm like, I don't know what computer you're using, but that computer has a virus, because I don't know how the Dubs are not, you know, the top of any analytical list of winning the championship. But some reason, somehow, some way, they had the Raptors and the Rockets as having the best odds to win the championship, and neither one of them made it to the finals. So, you know, now that they finally decided to break it up, I don't see Kawhi staying there next year. You know, he wants to go to the left coast, whether it's Clippers. I don't think he's going to the Lakers from people that I've talked to that are allegedly close to him. They're saying it's not going to be, he's not going to do another LeBron thing. So the Laker thing isn't going to happen. Maybe he goes to the Clippers or somewhere else, but now, if you're the Raptors, how the hell next year do you sell to your fan base, we have a chance because we have Kyle Lowry? And literally, right, that's it. Like, that's literally the only piece that's going to be left. It's Kyle Lowry on a bloated contract and Fred VanVleet. How can you sell that to ticket holders and season ticket, you know, packages? How the hell do you get that one off? Right.
I just don't like it, and it goes back to the Jimmy Butler thing. I don't understand why people think that this is the right way to build a team. This isn't how you build a team. You can't just bring in guys and hope they stay. And this works for whoever ends up signing, trading for Anthony Davis. This is let all this be a cautionary tale. This is just gonna end up the same way. It's just, you're gonna get a guy for a rental. You're going to stick around for a few months, and then you're going to be like, you know what, I want to get max money somewhere else, and I'm going to choose where I go. It doesn't work.
What if he's traded to LA, though? What if Anthony Davis is traded to LeBron, though? I mean, he just signed with the agency. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's – I don't know whether they're going to trade for him or just wait for him to walk over there, but, man, it seems kind of obvious that, you know, the unibrow is going to be with the Lake Show. Clutch Sports, right? Yeah.
Clutch Sports, yeah.
Yeah.
So I you're right. I think if you're the Lakers, I don't budge. I don't give anything. I just because he's not, wherever he gets traded to, whether he gets traded to Boston, I don't think he's gonna get traded to Boston either. I think, you know, there's some team out there that thinks that, you know, he can be the piece, and, you know, he could be for 3 months.
Right.
But once he's not, you know, he's already tired of losing in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And he saw them bring in Boogie, and, you know, Boogie got hurt, so that didn't really work out the way he wanted it to. But I think I really do believe that he does sign with the Lakers, and I think you know, wherever he ends up, that's where he ends up. So I hung the Lakers. I don't even bother trading for him if you're gonna bring him in.
Oh yeah, for sure. I don't see Pelinka and Magic budging, you know, hedging and flipping a Kuzma and an Ingram to go get Anthony Davis when you can have, you know, you can just add Anthony Davis and still keep all those pieces. Right. Like, imagine, you know, fine, they have JaVale on a one-year deal for obvious reasons. They have Lance and Rondo all on one-year deals. Michael Beasley all on one-year deals. You swap them all out and let AD walk in. I mean, look, Warriors be damned. The Warrior thing has been nice. But if you put LeBron with AD, and then you got Kuzma, who takes another step. Brandon Ingram, who, as you said, you know, you think he's really going to flourish playing off LeBron. And then we both have confidence in Alonzo. That's a monster five. Like, that's a legit, ridiculous five that can go right at the Dubs and be like, yo, we want next. And that's why Kyrie's crazy.
I think, well, yeah. Well, Kyrie is a different breed. Yeah. That's the East Coast now.
Yeah.
Kyrie just... and that's why I would love him to come here. It would be great if he did come here.
Right.
But I think it's kind of... It's insane that he wouldn't want to... I mean, that was a dynasty in the making.
Yeah, I mean, they could have ran the East for as long as they wanted to, you know. Unless he knew something, maybe LeBron tipped his hand with the L.A. move, and he's like, all right, well, if you dip it in a couple of years, let me get out, you know, before all of that is there and I'm stuck. You know what I'm saying? Maybe he knew that. I don't know. But, I mean, yeah, I think the Kyrie thing is a special thing because he's always been the man everywhere he went. He was the man in Cleveland when they drafted him after LeBron skated the first time. And I think he just wants to be the man somewhere. And you're kind of looking at it in Boston is Kyrie even the man in Boston right now? Like, can we really say...
That's a fair point.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's off pedigree, yes. But right now, who's more untradeable or untouchable? Tatum and Brown or Kyrie? Like... I'd flip Kyrie in a second if that means holding on to, you know, Tatum and Brown. Like, I'm here for the youth movement in Boston.
It's funny you bring that up too because Kyrie, while, you know, super talented and still young, even, like, he's only 26.
Right.
It's ridiculous that we're talking about like this, but I mean, he might be at best the second option, but I think Tatum's taking this team over. I think Tatum is the guy. It's ridiculous. And Hayward, we're not even talking about Hayward.
Right, like, right. Hayward's a baller. Hayward could get buckets. He could play D. He could hit the glass. He's a good playmaker. Like, bringing in a Hayward, that's why I think, you know, the Celtics being able to do what they did last year. Although I'm not a big Brad Stevens guy, he's another one that I think is a fraud, you know. But I mean, shit, you give me 5-6 lottery picks, and I think I could ball out too. Even if you take off Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, I could still ball out. But now you're bringing in what we assume is a healthy Kyrie and a still getting back to 100% Gordon Hayward, and you know, there's no reason why this team shouldn't win close to 60 games. Like, they should win 60 plus games. Like, if they don't win 60-plus as constituted, you know, barring a significant injury or a setback in Hayward's, you know, rehab or whatever, like, I got to look at them as, like, being shaky in the light.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Like, you know, coming into last season, people were talking about this team being, you know, 60-plus win team. And, you know, they even with Hayward's injury, they were very impressive. You're right. If we're not talking about the Celtics as, you know, one of the best teams in the league, not just the conference, but in the league.
Right.
I think something went wrong.
Agreed. Man, I want to transition into boxing because I know you know the boxing game as well. You had me on your show back in the day to talk about Mayweather and whatnot. Two things have gone down lately. We had the Canelo Triple G Part 2, that I think was a robbery yet again, but a little bit closer, a little bit closer of a robbery, but still to me a robbery. And then we got Floyd, you know, hanging out with Pacquiao and Macau, and they're trying to figure out a part two. So give me your thoughts on Canelo Triple G, and then we'll get into this Floyd Pac nonsense.
So first thing, with Canelo Triple G, you're absolutely right about that. I don't know what Triple G has to do to get a fair, I'm not going to say a fair fight, but I just feel like both fights were close, and I think it's just boxing's way of holding on and trying to drum up interest and get these $100 fights or $90 fights again, because really, who was the draw? You know, we used to have three, four, five, sometimes five fights in a year that were like, oh man, I really want to see that one. And I think this is just boxing's way of kind of like just dragging this out.
Right.
Not to take anything away from Canelo, but I think we're seeing twice now that Triple G fought his heart out and didn't get the outcome that he probably deserved.
Yeah.
As far as Floyd and Pacquiao, I have no interest in watching that. I have no interest in watching it. None.
Come on, yo. Somebody throw a fight party. You not coming through? Somebody throwing a fight party for Mayweather Pacquiao 2. Big screens.
Am I throwing money in?
Got put in 15. Not even $20. Just put in 15. 15 towards the pay-per-view in the bottles. You not doing that? 70-inch, 80-inch screen?
For 80-inch screen, $15, as long as winning than anything, I'm in.
Right.
But if I'm sitting at home...
Oh, yeah, hell nah.
Night, yeah. If I can't pull that bad boy up on Cody,
Right, facts. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to watch Floyd fight anybody, really. I don't want to watch Floyd, you know, duck and dodge. And I that's a game that I respect it. You know, one of the greatest to ever do it. But I also don't want to see Manny Pacquiao trying to throw punches from different angles and, you know, I don't want to see the 24/7, or I don't think it's going to be 24/7 anymore now that HBO said they're not covering boxing anymore. But I don't want to see the hype for the fight. And, you know, I don't want to see these old dudes just trying to drum up interest for a fight that probably won't be that entertaining anyway.
Yeah, I agree with most of that. I think the only thing for me is I just love a spectacle. I'm here for it. As you said, I'm not paying $100 for it. I ain't pay $100 for the first one. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I was out there in Vegas and we found a spot. You know, we had a homegirl that had a crib and we crashed her spot to watch the fight. I mean, it's just, I'm here for the spectacle because I know I'm not coming out my pocket for it.
Absolutely not, yeah.
Pacquiao is broke. I know everybody loves to talk about Floyd and his dog, Bob Arum. Bob Arum, bro. Like, yo, he's broke. He's a senator or a congressman or whatever in the Philippines. He could cash his own checks, but he's still broke because whenever he leaves, whenever he fights here in the U.S., that's why if you notice, his last few fights haven't been in the U.S.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He's out there getting those Macau bags. So it's because he don't want to pay that tax, because every time he comes here, the taxes is crazy and Arum's cut is crazy. So he has to fight anywhere else in the world so that Arum's cut isn't as much and the taxes aren't killing them as much. So for me, that fight would just be, you know, Floyd having mercy on Pacquiao and saying, look, I'll go in here and beat you again. I'll leave out of here with another 300 M's with my money on the back end with the Mayweather promotions. And then you can, you know, take your little 70 million and... I wish you the best. Like, God bless with that and hope you're not still broke after all of that. Like, I don't really see the interest in the fight, but I do think, like myself and others, we love a spectacle. So if the fight was to happen on that Saturday night, whatever date it would be, we would all be interested in how it goes down. Even though we know the outcome, we know how all 12 rounds are going to go, we know how Floyd's going to move, we know how Pacquiao's going to try to counterattack that, But we know how that movie ends, and it ends with Mayweather's hand being raised up.
Yeah, I agree. I just think, you know, the problem is we spent so much time as boxing fans waiting for Mayweather to back down, and it never happened. And when it finally did, we were so underwhelmed. So now any semblance of another fight is just kind of, like, sour, which is unfortunate because these are two of the greatest, you know, pound-for-pound fighters of our generation.
Yeah, for sure. And with the Triple G thing, like, so now that there's been, you know, Canelo has won both times, is there any interest to you in a third one? Do we need to see a third one? Because I don't know how, as you said, I don't know how Triple G's supposed to win. He can't win any decision against Canelo. As long as he's got that Golden Boy money behind him, he's never going to lose a decision. The only one he lost was Mayweather when it was just so obvious, and then Mayweather money was longer and stronger than Golden Boy.
Right. Yeah, I think we need to see it through. I think this is, I mean, that's it. I think after this, you know what you're getting out of 36 rounds of boxing. You know, it's unfortunate because I think, you know, Triple G is a worthy opponent, and he's not getting the love that he should be. He's not getting the appropriate reactions from the judges.
Right. Yeah, and I think he clearly won the first one. I don't know what Adelaide Byrd, who should never be allowed to be a judge in any significant fight ever again. I don't know how she had the scorecard so lopsided for Canelo in the first one, but it was obvious that Golden Boy secured a bag for her. But you know, that second one I thought was a little bit closer. There were definitely some rounds where Canelo was the aggressor and maybe landed a little bit more, but I thought Triple G over the second half of the fight just took over. So, yeah, I agree. We don't need to see 36 rounds of that. And I think
wasn't the stat that, like, Canelo had only, at one point, only threw, like, seven body hits, or landed seven body hits? And I'm like, how does somebody win only throwing or landing seven body shots?
Yeah, and the problem, and I think what kind of led the judges to score the fight for Canelo in the second one is Triple G ignored the body of Canelo. Like, even though Canelo only threw those seven or landed seven at one point or whatever, Triple G was even worse. Like, he was just headhunting the majority of the fight, and I think that cost him because Canelo still had that power later into the fight, which he didn't have in the first one because he didn't have the stamina that he did in the second one. So I think Canelo came in more prepared for the second one, and he was able to go the full distance, and somehow, some way, with, you know, that De La Hoya Golden Boy money behind him, was able to steal a second one off Triple G.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Well, you told me you're going to the Mets game tonight, and I have to put this out there as a person who was key tense, was a Mets fan. You want to see David Wright. You want to see Captain America one last time. Give the people here on the Pick a Pop podcast. I'm talking to Stan Talawi as part of the NBA offseason chop up. Give them a little MLB. Give them a little Mets. David Wright, Captain America. What? I'm jaded. I'm biased. I'm very anti David Wright, and I'll get into that. But I want you to get yours off. David Wright, Captain America. What did he mean to you?
Oh, man, I mean, so David Wright is one of the first guys that, as a Mets fan, that I saw come up, I was excited about. I remember when he got drafted. I remember when he came up. So, and it was kind of a similar point in my life because David Wright got drafted in, like, 2001. So I was, like, I think I was a senior in high school. He came up in 2004. I was in college. So I was able to see his entire progression through the minors and into the majors, and, you know, kind of taking over as the captain of the team and all that stuff. So I think that's kind of why he has a special place for me. Not to mention the fact that he was a fantastic player. Before the injuries and the spinal stenosis, he had, you know, a Hall of Fame track. I think it's hard to speculate, and I don't want to reduce his career to one thing, but, like, he is basically our version of Don Mattingly. Maybe, you know, not with the MVPs, but, I mean, I remember in 2006, you know, before the All-Star break, he had 20-plus home runs, and he did the home run derby, and he messed up his swing, but he was still the driving force behind the Mets getting to the NLCS and eventually losing to the Cardinals. So, to me, David Wright holds a special place in my heart, and I'm biased because, obviously, I watched him his entire career. I'm literally in my room right now watching, looking at a fat head of David Wright. So, I just think, you know, every generation has their guy. You know, my friends before us, you know, I remember the tail end of Piazza. I remember Piazza pretty much. I watched most of Piazza's career. I remember Todd Hundley. If you ask me my top five favorite Mets of all time, you know, a lot of them are on those late 90s teams, like, you know, Benny Adbayani was one of my favorites. You know, Eduardo Alfonso. I have a special place for those teams. Mike Hampton.
Mike Hampton. Oof.
Yeah. But, you know, for...
How's that school system in Colorado, Mike?
Yeah, right? I mean, it didn't work out for me for him, but the thing about right, and like, and now Conforto and Nimmo and Rosario, I have an affinity for these guys as well. So it's all about homegrown talent, and I wish his career had gone a different way with, you know, without injuries and whatnot, but I mean, it is what it is. And I really enjoyed the outpour of gratitude for his career from not just Mets fans, but, I mean, Yankee fans are showing love. The Phillies, the Braves, I hate them, but, you know, they're showing love and they're showing respect, and I love that.
You know, I could so go in on David Wright, just because as and you spoke eloquently just now. I have to tell you. You put a bow on that one very nicely. And as someone who was a Met fan, who was a supporter, and who, like, lived and died with the team at one point, I agree with most of everything you said. The problem for me was that goddamn home run derby. That was where, when that team spit the bit and lost that lead and choked away that chance at a postseason berth, It hurt me and it hit me to a point where I was like, I can't do this. I can't keep doing this to myself because I don't have control over it. I don't have any say in it, but I'm allowing all of this to consume me and take over for me. So
I agree.
That's where I had to draw the line. I was like, all right, I need to chill on my fandom because I'm taking this a little bit too hard and it has nothing to do with me. And so from that point forward, I had to be more critical and had to not look at it from a fan perspective and more of a, yo, why is this team bad? Why is this team choking away, you know, what was it, like 8 games up with 7 to play or some nonsense like that? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, yo, why is this team doing this? And it always comes down to ownership. And as long as those two dudes are running that team, as long as the Wilpons are in charge, I will not give them one penny of my money. Not through merchandising, not through anything. 100%. I can't do it.
I agree with you 100%. I think it's time for the league to step in. I think it's time for the league to say, okay, you guys are running this thing into the ground. Your fans are frustrated. And it's like if the league can step in and force Frank McCourt to sell the Dodgers.
Right.
I think it's time for the league to start thinking about, you know, forcing the Wilpons to sell the Mets. Because what are we doing?
And I think they need to call their bluff on them claiming how much money they lost with Madoff. It was a sensational story when it first dropped. It probably hurt them initially once. You know, Madoff got his scam on. But, yo, with that SNY deal, with that TV revenue deal, they're making a lot of money. I don't want to hear the broke talk. I don't want to hear the, oh, we still reeling from the Madoff. They still got the Sterling, you know, they still got the real estate game on lock, especially over there in that area, over there in Flushing. They got a lot of holdings. Like, they're making money in all their other businesses. While they can cry broke in terms of the Mets entity. When it comes to that SNY in the real estate, they are killing. So I don't want to hear no more of that broke talk from the Wilpons.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Like, they've been selling the Mets fans of bill of goods for a long time now, and it's time for them to really either, if you're really broke, sell the team. If you're not broke, sell the team.
Right. Cash out. If you need the bread, cash out.
The team is making money. The team is, there's no way they're not. I don't see how they can not be making money.
City Field is beautiful. It makes a lot of money with other events that's not Met related. Like, they sell it out with concert series, and they be doing Spartan races up in there and all types of shit. Yeah. So there's money coming in to the entity that the Wilpons own 365 days a year.
Yeah. And, I mean, I've been to a few games this year. I went to a few games last year. They're not selling out by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
The team isn't good. But if you put a product on the field that fans want to see, people will show up. As evidenced by, I got these tickets tonight for very little money.
Mm.
And as soon as it went on sale, and as soon as they announced that David Wright was going to be his last game starting, I could have sold these tickets for 10 times what I got it for.
Right.
Like, it just goes to show you, if you put a product on the field,
they'll come.
That people want to see, people will come.
Yeah.
And just the Wilpons just aren't doing that. You know, and it's little things. It's little things like wanting control over every little detail with Jeff or Fred claiming broke, or the medical staff claiming that should have gone on the DL sooner, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Or, like, little things. All these things compound each other and make this to be the biggest laughingstock in the league.
And let DeGrom get that Cy Young, and that's all they're going to be promoting. We have the Cy Young Award winner.
Sure.
Yeah, but he only won 10 games. He has a sub-2 ERA, and he only has 10 wins to show for it.
Like, he's historically good with a barely .500 record.
Right.
And that's a shame, because he's a guy with... I saw a stat. If the Mets had scored 3 runs in all of his starts, he would have won, like 30-0.
Hilarious.
30-0.
Hilarious. They're such a joke.
This guy doesn't make 30 starts.
Right.
He would have won 30-0 if the Mets had scored 3 runs in all of his starts. That's ridiculous.
And that's the thing. And they needed offense. And then they go out here and they get retreads like Joey Bats, Jose Bautista. And then they go bring back Reyes, hoping they could catch lightning in a bottle again. And that's just, it's like, dude, it's like, yo, take the L. Take the L. You've lost to the point. You went on a miracle run to that World Series just a couple of years ago when you had all the pitchers healthy. But ever since then, it's been a train wreck when it comes to the healthiness of the arms and the bats aren't the same. And, you know, they lost that luster. Like, the Royals took advantage with the youth movement of the bullpen and young hitters. But they knew...
Yeah.
We're going to get this chip, and then we're going to go back to being trash because we're going to have to start paying people, and that's it. Whereas the Mets thought, all right, well, we're just going to still keep people on the cheap. You can't keep these dudes on the cheap. You're going to have to pay Thor. You're going to have to pay DeGrom, and they had to pay Cespedes, but he hasn't really panned out the way they thought he would. So they're just a shop of horrors, as they used to be. Like, this is like the same old Mets. You know, they used to think same old Jets. To me, this is just the same old mess. They always find a way to fuck it up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a comedy of errors. Like, it's the fact is, we're going back to the point where you talk about the Mets. Like, you know, they still have the record for most losses in a season from their inaugural year. And the joke was that, you know, the Mets are finding new ways to lose. And that's evidenced by when we saw them lose to, I think it was the Phillies or the Braves, like giving up, 20-something, I forgot how many.
It was like 20-plus runs. It was like a ridiculous video game type number of runs.
It was embarrassing. And that's, mentality theirs.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't see any hope. Like, you know, they have young prospects. They got Dom Smith, who I like, but, you know, he doesn't really – look, he's a young kid, so I can't kill him too much. But, you know, they brought him up to put him out there, you know, a September call-up. And, you know, I'm not that impressed so far, but, I mean, I heard all the tools that he had.
That's another thing, too, is because they bring in Jay Bruce, and they have Dom Smith waiting there. Jay Bruce isn't very good.
Right.
And
why not let Dom Smith play?
Yeah, let him play. Let him get some opportunities.
Right.
And then on top of that, you got Peter Alonso in the minors, who's raking at a historic level in the minors, and they won't bring him up because they want to control him for next year.
Arbitration,
yeah. I get the business side of it. I totally understand the business side of it, but come on.
Right.
Like, the kid is ready to play.
Look, I understand you want to control the finances. It makes business sense. Yeah, and you know they're doing the same thing with Vlad Guerrero Jr. They're doing the same thing with him. You know, pigeonholing his at bats to control his years because he's going to be a monster. But at some point, you have to give the fan base a reason to come back next year. And you can't tell me the only reason for a Met fan to come back next year is that you might see DeGrom pitch. You can't sell. Yeah, I mean, you can't sell, you know, an 80, 81-game package that you might get 15 DeGrom starts out of those 81. You can't do that.
No, it's unfair to the fan base. And it sucks because, you know, like, a lot of the talk this week and today is going to be, you know, it's a shame that David Wright never won a World Series and this, that, and the other thing. But who was to blame for that? And that's really why... one of the biggest reasons I'm going to the game is because I can't blame David Wright for the ineptitude of the bullpen. Like I need to be there to celebrate one of the best franchise players we've ever had, and a guy whose career is basically squandered because of mismanagement.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, from Omar Minaya to Sandy Alderson, there's been a lot of nonsense. Jerry DePoto, it's been a lot of nonsense in between in the front office that have caused, you know, bad free agent signings to bad trades to the gutting of a farm system to rebuilding the farm system and mismanaging that. It's been a lot, and he's been the mainstay. So I do give him respect for that. I just think in the end, he's just going to become that dude that we look at, and it's like, man, what could have been? You know, because he missed a lot of games over the second half of his career with injuries. You know, he had the Triple XL helmet, the kazoo helmet because of the concussion stuff. Like, he's been snake bit over the second half of his career, and I think that robbed him of whatever, you know, Cooperstown type numbers he could have put up.
Yeah. And the best I can hope now is that he ends up staying with the organization. I would be surprised if by, you know, this time next year we're talking about him as like a special instructor in the minors, or he'll definitely be there in spring training, I'm sure.
Sure.
But I hope that, you know, they keep him around on some capacity because he deserves it. He deserves to be, you know, part of the organization.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I agree. And I do think the fans will come out and give him the proper farewell that he deserves because he has put in the years and the work. You know, I want to get into something with you because I know you're a guy that has been in the industry. You've worked at some of the most highly acclaimed places in the industry, and you're doing your own thing now, and you're doing your own thing in terms of your comedy, and you're going to be launching a podcast in the very near future. So what should we look forward to from you when it comes to your stand up, and what should we look forward to you in terms of your soon to be launching podcast?
Well, as far as stand-up comedy goes, I've been doing a lot of work at Mitchell Hive in Woodside. The address there is 3208 61st Street. It's a great performance space. They're really inclusive and giving a lot of opportunity to Queens comedians. I recently produced a show there. I'll be producing more shows going forward. I've been trying to, you know, perform all over the place. I host and produce a monthly comedy show in Bushwick at Pine Box Workshop. Anybody that knows, I book the best comics in New York. People that you might not know yet, are going to blow up. Guys that have, I literally produced a show a few months ago. One of my friends, Usama Siddiqui, got passed to the Comedy Cellar. I mean, he's one of the hardest working comedians in New York. I mean, when you think about stand-up comedy, yeah, sure, you think about the heavy hitters, you know, the Kevin Harts, the Dave Chappelle, the legends. But they started out somewhere, and I think that the current group of young comics in New York right now are on their way to doing great things. I mean, what bothers me, and we've seen in the headlines lately, is especially with black comedians, it's kind of like the Highlander. It feels like there can only be one. Whether it's Kevin Hart, Cat Williams, they're beefing because the way it's not just the industry, the way the culture forces us to galvanize around one comedian, right. I don't like it. So I think one of the things that I try to do is one, kind of get the diversity going, let people know that there are funny female comedians, there's funny Asian comedians, there's funny black comedians, there's funny Spanish comedians.
Right.
So I try to get balance going on all my comedy shows. Two is, you know, let people know that it's not just the OGs that are around. There's some young cats that are doing their thing, that are really blowing up. I could sit here all day and name names like Alex Babbitt, you know, I ended up on Def Jam. Eagle Witt is a New York guy, and he's been blowing up. Mm. Brandon Sagalo is a guy who's been on tour in the Northeast, and I think, you know, time and time again, we're going to start seeing these New York comics kind of blow up and make a name for themselves, and really surprise people.
That's dope, man. I think that's something that shows a lot of unity in terms of the Queens thing and keeping that together, but also having the multiple diverse background comedians as well, because, you know, as you mentioned, it's not just about, you know, propping up black comedians, but there's Spanish dudes, there's females, there's, you can find comedy is not regulated to one particular set. You know, anybody could crack a joke, anybody can have a funny bit. You know what I'm saying? It's not just earmarked for one particular set of people. So I love that aspect of it. As far as you go, because I know you, knowing you for so long, you've been doing your thing on stage as well. Are you transitioning to doing more of the producer thing, or are you still doing your thing on the mic as well?
Well, yeah, I still perform. Every show that I've produced, I've either hosted or I've done a set. I've been expanding my own set. Recently, I headlined at the Mitchell Hive.
Okay.
Because they've been showing me a lot of love, so, you know, I got to shout them out. But, you know, it's being a New York comedian is unique because there's tons of opportunity, there's tons of open mics, there's tons of bar shows. So one of the reasons I started my own show was to kind of showcase myself, not just a producer, but as a comedian, so that, you know, when I book a comic, they know I'm serious, and you know I do as well as I can. And when they have a show, they know that I'm gonna bring the pain as well. You know, so
right.
So as far as my own comedy, I've been really trying to push myself to just do as much as I can. I'm out at least a few times a week trying new material. And I've got my tight. I would say tight 10 to 15 minutes.
That's dope.
Now, so I'm ready to go.
That's dope, man. I you know, that's a thing I don't think people don't understand. Like, that's a thing. Having a tight 10 to 15 is not easy. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's normally, especially for like a new comic, they're lucky to have a tight 4 minutes, 3 minutes. You right. know what I'm saying? But yeah. you've been in the game for so long, and you've tightened up your craft and have gotten so good at your craft that, you know, you could be put on any stage and rock for 10 to 15 minutes. Like, that's not easy at all to go stand up in front of people and not sure how the crowd is or how the vibe is or if the last comic was trash and bombed or whether the last comic killed before you. And now you got to try to win back the crowd or whatever the case may be. Like, take me through that process of being able to build up to where now you got a strong 10 to 15. Like, how long did it take you to get to No Way. You know, if at any given moment somebody hits you up to do a set, you got to fire 10 to 15.
Oh, man. The current show that I've been working on, it started maybe 3 years ago that I kind of worked on it and like added to it to the point where it got to be a pretty solid 10 to 15 minutes. I'll give you a funny story. Like, recently I did a show at Broadway Comedy Club, and the host was all over the place. He's doing 5 minutes in between each comic, killing the room.
Wow.
He's not asking for comics' last names, so he's bringing us up on a first name basis, and it's super awkward. And he really killed the room. He killed the vibe. And, you know, to the point where, like, you know, I had to follow a comic who blew the light, didn't want to get off stage because he was so frustrated with how the host was doing. And, you know, to be fair, I was a little high. I had taken an edible. So I had just come from a fantasy football draft. So I was in a different mindset. But, you know, I've worked on this shit so long that I just know how to go and what to do, and I know what the crowd work is going to be like. I know how to take advantage of it, and I rock out because that's just what I do.
Right.
So it's taken a while. This particular set, I will say, I would say 3 years from when I first started kind of writing and putting it together is how long it took to get it to where I wanted to be. And I'm still working on it now. There's still jokes that I'm, you know, tags that I add every so often, and I'm just like, okay, what if I did this? What if I had this? And, you know, it's a work in progress. It's always going to be a work in progress, man. And it's a grind, and I'm addicted to it. And I don't know what I would do if I wasn't a stand-up. Like, I think I would just be bored all the time.
And see, that's the thing, yo, as you mentioned, the grind. That's the grind. 3 years, three joints to be able to rock and not just be able to get up and talk for 15, 10. Like, yo, you get up and you rock it. You get up and you kill it for 10 to 15. Yo, that's a salute to you, man. You that's the type of grind I want people to understand. Like, that's what you have to do. Like, you're not always going to be able to put in. You're not gonna be able to. All right, I'm gonna put in a good hard 6 months, and then I'm gonna be popping. Like, nah, years,
bro. There
are
people that believe that. There are people that think that. There are comics out there that I've heard, that I've spoken to. They're like, they start out and they're like, I'm giving myself 6 months to make it. And I'm like,
wow.
I've been doing this for 8 years. What do you think is gonna happen? Like, it's not. Could you get lucky? Sure. Like, that show crashing? Total bullshit. Complete and utter bullshit. It doesn't work that way. It's not like you just decide you're funny and you go to the city and like handing out those flyers. I did that, man. I did that. I put in the work.
Right.
And, you know, this is one of those industries where you put in the work and it might not pay off, but you got to be in it for the love. And it's just like one of my favorite comedians is Big J Okerson. Big J, I'm talking about like one of the funniest guys I've ever been around. One of the nicest guys I've ever been around. And 17 years in the game.
No
like
doubt.
Like, doing Comedy Central sets and doing Premium Blend back in the day and doing things here and there. It took him 17 years to get an hour special. And he did it. And he rocked out.
That's what I'm saying.
Sometimes it works that way, and sometimes it works the other way, where, you know, my boy Chris DiStefano, you know, started out comedy around the same time that I did. But he put in the work, and he was awarded for it a lot quicker.
Right.
It's a different for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember listening to Big J when he used to come on Bennington's show on Sirius with Ron Bennington. Yeah. He used to do that a lot. Yeah, he's come a long way for sure. That's dope.
Absolutely.
That's dope.
And, you know, like I said, things happen in different ways for different people.
Yeah.
Like, Pete Davidson, you know, he started around the same time that I did, and, you know, he's on SNL now. He's engaged to Ariana Grande.
Right, yeah.
I'm proud of him. I'm super proud of him, and, you know, he's going to keep doing big things because, you know, he's talented.
Right.
But, you know, people need to realize that things like this don't happen overnight. It is a grind. And what's different about comedy is it's it's a lonely grind. It's a very lonely grind. It's, you know, going from open mic to open mic by yourself, going home by yourself, writing your jokes by yourself, you're on stage by yourself. So, you know, even with all that, I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. It's just, I enjoy it so much. It's literally like heroin. I've never done heroin, but I would imagine heroin is a lot like doing stand-up comedy, which I understand. This, which makes sense as to why you have guys that OD sometimes on.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, I can see that for sure. Man, that's dope, man. Look, I thank you for coming on with me, and I love the conversation we had. I hope to do it again in the future when you have your joint popping off. You know, it's
absolutely.
And you know, definitely plug all your stuff as much as you want here as we wrap it up here on the Pick a Pop podcast. Go ahead and plug. I know you plugged your show earlier, but go ahead and plug it again for the people.
Every fourth Tuesday, I host a show called Kombucha in Bushwick. It's at a Pine Box Workshop, 12 Grattan Street. It's a free show. Sometimes I give out free drinks. And the show, the comedy show, always built. The next one is October 23rd. You can see me every Monday, typically, at the Misfit Hive, 7208 61st Street in Woodside, Queens. Two blocks away from the 7 train, two blocks away from the Long Island Railroad, Woodside stop. As far as podcast go, I'm still rocking out trying to do That's My Shit podcast as much as possible. If you want, go back, listen to some old episodes. We're on iTunes. I believe we're not on Stitcher, we're on Google Play. We're on Laughable. But, you know, wherever you have, wherever you can get podcasts, type in That's My Shit podcast and that'll pop up. I just got into MacBook Pro, so I'm thinking about doing my own solo podcast again, as I used to do Joking Off until D-Ray Davis stole the name and started the MCV2 show.
Right.
So all that stuff you can find on my Instagram and Twitter at FunnyManStan everywhere. One word. Funny man saying all one word. So yeah, follow me there, and I interact. So if you tweet me, I will tweet you back, because I have no life. All I do is crack jokes and eat hot dogs.
Definitely a funny dude, and as y'all saw in this conversation, we veered off into many different topics, and we was able to keep that going. So Stan Tellawe, bro Rogan at Funny Man Stan, the homie from way back. I appreciate you for coming on, and I love to look forward to doing it again.
Hey, yo, I don't think that I'm not following you getting some good vegan recipes, bro. I'm a diabetic. I'm trying to lose some weight.
Oh, I got you then. I got you. I've been rocking with it for like, it'll be 6 years in December. So I got you. No worries.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, you know what? I've been seeing this girl now. We tried to do the keto thing, and I don't like avocado, so like it's kind of hard.
Got you. Okay.
But I've seen that you've been doing the good vegan thing, and I've been paying attention.
Okay, so yeah, that's been something I've been kind of iffy with and trying to keep up. But yeah, that's something I definitely want to get that back and going, because, you know, I don't think our people are health conscious enough. I don't think everybody should go vegan. It's not for everybody, but I do think, you know, to at least be more conscious of what they're putting into the bodies. I think that should be, you know, bare minimum. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Especially in the industry that we kind of came from, like, you know, there's a lot of times that, you know, you just reach for whatever
right.
you can get.
Whatever and snacks, vending machines.
You know, I'd be working at 4 to 12, and the easy thing is Tex-Mex or Chinese food.
Right. Right. Yeah, you get stuck. You're stuck with what you're surrounded by, and we're normally stuck surrounded by junk, you know what I'm saying? And it's a thing where it takes a lot of prep, it takes a lot of willpower, but I mean, the same grind you got with the comedy, it's kind of like the same grind I've had to do in trying to like overhaul my diet over the years. So,
yeah.
But for sure, good looks on that.
It's a struggle. It's an everyday struggle.
Yeah, facts. Big facts. I mean, there's sometimes I walk by Crown Fried Chicken over there on Sufton, and I know that chicken smell a mile away, and I'm like, yo, a little 5-piece would be nice right about now. But, you know, no, gotta make sure I get to the crib, hook up some boring ass quinoa, but just make sure I season it up with some sazon or whatever to make sure give it a little bit of some flavor. But you know that's that's the struggle I go through.
Yeah, I feel you, bro. I feel you.
But facts, man.
I appreciate you having me on, man. I really do. Like, I mean, it's been really good to chop it up with you, man. Because, like, you know. We were talking off air. It's like coming from the industry, being black guys, in a mostly, if not all white male dominated industry.
Right.
It's good to remember that we shared a struggle.
Yeah.
We shared a
for sure. I saw a lot of things. You know, you saw a lot of things. We both experienced a lot. We've had to take L's. You know what I'm saying? But we've both have come out of it in a major way, and have both have paved our own way, you know, in spite of, you know, all of those or certain situations that have been put in front of us. And that's why I want to keep giving people like us platforms. You know what I'm saying? Like, because if we fade away, then there's certain, you know, narratives that just get put out there and they continue to grow and they never get to change. But if we...
Absolutely.
If we can find a way to keep, you know, putting ourselves on and putting ourselves out there and keep promoting the events that we're doing, then, you know, we'll never fade away. We'll never die out.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. That's well said.
Thank you so much for coming on. That is Stan Talawee. He came on the NBA offseason chop-up edition of the Pick and Pop podcast. Y'all know where you can find it. SoundCloud, Google Play, Apple iTunes, Stitcher Radio. Pick and Pop podcast. I'll be back again next week with another interview. I'm out.